Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What is your favorite sports car? Is it a Bugatti? Is it a Maserati? Is it a Lamborghini, or is it something else? What's your favorite sports car? Get that in your mind. Just get it sort of gleaming and all new and shiny and everything. And you're going to take it for a spin. You're going to actually go for a ride in it in your imagination. I want you to be going along the Autobahn at about someone who knows. What's the number of kilometers for 180 miles an hour? Ballpark. 240? I say you're going along at about 250 kilometers, right? You know, you're cruising right along. And you come over this hill on the Autobahn, and you look down in the valley, and it's dense fog there. And you can see beyond it about a mile away, it's clear again. But when you go through that fog, what do you have to do? You have to sort of slow down to be safe. There's always someone that says, don't speed up. But we all know you have to slow down. When you get into that dense fog, you may be going 1 kilometer an hour and still feeling dangerous because you don't know what you're going to run into, or some 18-wheeler is going to come along and hit you in the rear end. So it doesn't feel safe. You know, you can't go fast safely, etc. Now, let me suggest to you that other than Satan himself, the three enemies you have as a leader are these. Number one, your number one enemy as a leader is fog in your thinking. A guy named John Patterson said, my first responsibility as a leader is to see. Because if I can't see, I'm like the blind leading the blind. So your first job is to actually get your thinking out of the fog. And then if you don't, foggy thinking always leads to fatigue. Vince Lombardi, a great American coach, said, fatigue makes cowards of us all. When you get exhausted, things that are easy when you're rested seem impossible when you're exhausted. So fog leads to fatigue. But that always leads to flirtations, not just flirtations with the opposite sex, but flirtations with ideas you shouldn't be thinking about. I think I'll just resign. I don't think I've got it anymore. I think I'm over the hill, that kind of thinking. You're flirting with ideas you shouldn't be flirting with. Always. When your head is foggy and you're exhausted. But it all starts with fog in your thinking. Now, how old will you be in 10 years? 10 years from today, how old will you be? Is there anyone in the room that likes thinking about that? It's like none of us like to think 10 years away because it seems so old. You think of yourself in the next decade, you think, oh, that sounds so old. Do you think life is going to be all wonderful between now and then? We're all old enough to know we have hills and valleys between here and then. But what you're going to find as a leader is that there are times when you get far more than you ever expected, and you need to focus and refocus your thinking in light of this new opportunity you've got. Hey, I've got an opportunity I never expected to have. Well, how do I focus and refocus? What did that mean to me? What do I want to take it or not? And then there are other times when you go lower than you ever thought you could go. And then when you're down there, you think, how do I get my focus back? How do I get out of this discouragement I'm in? I'd like to share with you in the next few minutes the three tools that I've found to be the most helpful tools of all in focusing and refocusing your thinking. Now, you've got an outline in your laptop there, but I'd like to just give you three overall tools, and they're compatible with your outline, okay? The first thing you have to do is have the ability to focus your thinking at what I call the 50,000-foot level. In other words, at 50,000 feet, at the big picture level, how do you focus your thinking at sort of the biggest picture, biggest thought process of all, as you're thinking about the future? the grandest thoughts of all. And these are abstract. They aren't measurable. These aren't measurable priorities. These are abstractions. It's like the North Star. You don't ever plan to get to the North Star. It just gives you a sense of direction. And what I'm going to share with you right now, I call the North Star. In other words, how do you define your North Star in life? What are the elements of it? What are the components that no matter where you go or what you do for the rest of your life, this can help focus your thinking? And a part of what you're trying to figure out in life is, how do I focus who I am and where I fit? And then, is that compatible with the organization I'm a part of? So you can use the North Star both to focus your own thinking in terms of independent from any your current organization or any organization you'll ever be part of, or you can use it to focus your organization. If you're the director of the organization, you can use the same exact tool to focus the organization. Right now, I'd like to have you focus on your personal. Use it as a personal focus tool. The first thing in your thinking has to be, who is God? That is a who question. Who is God? The reality is every person, every human has to ask that question. Because if you say, there is no God, that influences and gives perspective every single thing you do or think or, you know, even consider. It's done in the context of, there is no God. If you say that God is Muhammad, that influences absolutely everything you think about. But if you say God is the God of the Bible, then that influences everything you think. Everyone has to come to grips with who is God, whether you believe in him or not, whether you believe in him as you believe in him or I believe in him, regardless of how you look at it, your first question in life has to be, who is God? Based on who that is, you basically have to ask the question, if this is who God is, what is my purpose or mission? After years of being involved in the area of trying to define these kind of things, I can't distinguish between the word purpose and mission. Both of them are asking the why question. If this is who God is, why am I here? What am I about? Your purpose and mission is basically a why question. Why am I here? Then you have a dream or vision question. I can't distinguish those. Dream and vision to me are the same thing. And that is a what question. If this is who God is, and this is why I'm here, what difference do I hope to make sometime before I die? That is a what question. That is, what difference do I hope to make sometime before I die? Then the fourth question is basically your life work. What will be my life work? Which is a how question. How will I make the difference I'm planning to make? What will be my profession, my career? How will I make that difference? And then the last question is legacy, which is basically a how long question. When I was about your age, or collective sort of summary of all your ages, I began to see that my life, there was a phrase, saying, C.T. Studd saying, he says, one life will soon be passed, only what's done for Christ will last, which is very, very true. The older you get, the faster time goes. But I realized when I was like 35 or 38 that basically my life, it's like it's a vapor, it's a mist, it's gone. So what I was trying to do, was hoping to do in my lifetime, is to create tools, books and tapes and that kind of thing, which would last 100 years beyond me or until the Lord returned. Because my life was laying a foundation for leaders in the future, leaders like yourself. That was my legacy, was to try to give you tools or training or insights or information that could help strengthen you for a lifetime. But that I was going to try to be the most invisible person in the world. It's like you basically, it's like most of the people I've ever met would forget my name the first day after I met them. But the question isn't, would they remember my name? It's the question is, did I help them when I met them? When I was with them, did I help them? Did I strengthen them? Did I make them better? Did I help them see things they hadn't seen? Did I help them grow into their potential? That was my question, not will they remember my name? It's like, no, people won't. It's like when you meet people, they forget your name the next day. So don't try to, you know, anyway. But the point is, what will be your legacy? Long after you're dead, how long do you want what you do, what contribution you make, to last? These five questions are, to me, the five questions you have to deal with at the 50,000-foot level. If you deal with those, you're way down the track. Now, I'm going to give you a little insight here that I think will help you no matter what you're doing, and that is, you know, we have two ways of processing things. Some are very logical and some are very intuitive, and some are a combination of both. But let me show you how to harness your intuitive side. We shake hands with someone intuitively, we know sort of good person, bad person, you know, somewhere in between, but we haven't logically thought all that through. It's like our instincts tell us. But how do you harness your instincts? You harness your instincts by asking yourself a very specific question with a very limited time frame. And when you do that, your instincts will do all the processing for you. They do all the heavy lifting for you. Here's how it works. Think of any person on your team, any person that reports to you, or anyone you report to, or anyone that's a colleague of yours. Just get a person in mind. Okay? Now ask yourself this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would I rate that person in terms of long-term fit for what they're doing? Where 10 is, I think they're a perfect fit for the long term, meaning 3 to 5 years. 1 is they should have been fired a long time ago. I don't know how to get rid of them. Now, what rating on a scale of 1 to 10 would you give that person that you have in mind? How long did that take you? Matter of seconds. Now, it may take you you could spend 2 hours unpacking logically why you gave them an 8 or a 3 or whatever you gave them. There's instinctively, you know who they are. Instinctively, you know how good they're doing, how bad they're doing. It's like you know that all instinctively. And your mind processed it in a matter of seconds. And I'm saying, let me show you how to use that instinctive processing by asking a clear question. How do you rate them 1 to 10 with a limited time frame? Okay? If you will do the same thing here, you may think, well, this would take me 7 years to unpack this. It'll take you about 10 minutes. You do it this way. You say, in 2 minutes, give yourself a time. 2 minutes, who is God? I believe God is. And just write it out for 2 minutes, and you're going to find that if you do that in 2 minutes, you'll come to the same answer as you would if you took 2 days. You can unpack it for 2 days if you want to, but in 2 minutes, your system will give you that. And then, why am I here? What's my purpose? What's my mission? I'll give it to you in 2 minutes. A dream, 2 minutes. Life work. Now, this may take a little longer because at your age, you may not know your life work until you're maybe 40, 45, 50 years old. Often it doesn't become clear what I want to do the rest of my life, what's worthy of the rest of my life energy until you're 40, 45, 50 years old. And legacy you can process in 2 minutes again. So sometime while you're here at this conference, I encourage you to get away for 10 minutes or 15 or 20 minutes and give yourself 2 minutes on each one of these, okay? If I had more time, I'd give it to you, but I haven't got more time. Okay, this is at 50,000 feet. Then you need to ask at 20,000 feet, where you get into practicality, like measurability and those kind of things. At 20,000 feet, how do you get a look at your life at a 20,000-foot level? And it's like this. All planning begins at the end and works backwards. All of your current decision-making, wise decision-making, is made in the context of long-term thinking. If you go out here in the highway, the stop sign, and you don't know whether you're going to Russia or Germany, you don't know where you're going to go, it's hard for you to make a wise decision at the stop sign. You may go this way for a while and think, man, I'm not sure that's it, and go this way. But if you say, we're going to go to Moscow, it's very clear at every point where you're going. And the clearer you can be on where you want to go someday, the clearer every decision you make is. So what you do is you say, in life, if I could only accomplish 10 things, what would I accomplish that are measurable? And again, your brain will give it to you faster than you think. And then you say, if I could only accomplish 3 of the 10, which would be the 3, and then if I could only accomplish 2 of the 3, and then if I could only accomplish 1 of the 3. And what you're going to find is that of the top 3 things in life, you're going to find here's the number one thing. You say, if I could only accomplish one thing in life, it'd be that one. And then number 2 and number 3. You'll be surprised at how fast it focuses for you. Then you look at 10 years, like I ask you, how old will you be in 10 years? And you say, if by my 10 years from today, I could only accomplish 3 things, what would it be? Do the same thing. If I could only accomplish 2 and then 1, it'll show you, if I could only do one thing in the next 10 years, what would I do? That it becomes very clear to you. And then at 1 year, a year from today, if you could only do 3 things, what would it be? If I could only do one thing in the next year, what would it be? And then you go to 90 days. Steve Douglas, who is now the president of CRU, which was originally called Campus Crusade for Christ. We were working together in maybe 1985 or something like that. And he said, well, Bob, what are the 3 things we could do in the next 90 days that make a 50% difference? I said, Steve, do you ask that all the time? That's one of the most fantastic questions I've ever heard. He said, I don't think so. I said, let me get it word for word. What are the 3 things we could do in the next 90 days that make a 50% difference? I said, Steve, 50% difference in what? He said, it doesn't matter. He said, you could say 50% difference this year, 5 years, 10 years, and lifetime. What are the 3 things you could do in the next 90 days that make a 50% difference at the end of a year? Or 10 years, or your life? Once you get that, again, you've got, here's number 1, number 2, and number 3. Once you get these 12 things that are measurable that you could do, you're going to find yourself with a very clear understanding of your future. Now, all planning is done in pencil or in computer. So it isn't an indelible ink. So that a year from now, you can change this quite a bit. It's like based on what you've seen in that year, you can change these quite a bit. So basically, I'd encourage you to have a planning time in your life about once a year, and it can be on your birthday, around your birthday, or it can be January 1st-ish. But about once a year, take some time away, an hour or two away by yourself, or a day or two away by yourself, and just review your North Star and say, is this still how I see it? This still me? And then do the same thing with your bucket list. This is what I call a bucket list. What are the things I want to do before I die? In the U.S., we have a thing called bucket list. Before I kick the bucket, it's a bucket list. This is your bucket list. The first thing's your North Star. This is your bucket list. What are the things I want to do sometime before I kick the bucket, before I die? I'm saying review those once a year at your birthday, January 1st or whatever, so that you keep having a clear focus for everything that happens. Good news, bad news. I've still got a context in which I'm looking at everything to know, what does this mean? One of the things that was the most helpful insight I've ever had is this statement. Nothing is meaningful without a context. Not one thing in your life is meaningful without a context. This is a part of the context of your life. So what your life means, what does it mean that I've just turned 31 or 41 or 50? What does that mean? Well, in the context of this, it's like, do I make this job change, or do I take this promotion, or what? Well, this is the context in which you're looking at the major decisions of your life. Then the third tool is what I call ground level. Ground ground level. And it's basically a to-do list. And you may have a to-do list that's absolutely fabulous. It works for you every day, all the time. I say, then keep using that system. But in case you haven't worked it out quite yet, let me show you the one that's worked for me for 20 years or so, and you can use it or you don't have to. And it goes like this. It's basically a grid. It's in my computer, and it looks like this. Level one is week. It's today. Today, this week, and this month. And then across here is to do, to email, and to call. What you've got in your life is a lot of confetti coming at you, a lot of pieces, a lot of things you got to keep track of, a lot of, I got to call him, I got to call her, I got to email this person, I've got to write an article on this. It's like a lot of things to do coming at you all the time as you're moving toward your bucket list items. But they aren't all immediate. You don't have to do them all today. But you think of, hey, I should call so-and-so. Well, should I do that today or this week or this month? How urgent is that call? But you don't want to forget to do it. Let me tell you a quick story. Let's say your mom says to you, hey, would you mind stopping by the store, grocery store, and picking me up a dozen things? You say, sure, Mom, I'd be happy to. Quart of milk, loaf of bread, dozen eggs. It's just simple stuff. She said, only two things. Number one, you cannot write it down. And number two, I don't need it till a week from Friday. What happens to your head in the meantime? You say, Mom, look, you don't understand how busy I am right now. I've got a conference to attend. I've got books to write. I've got sermons to give. I'm just overwhelmed right now. Say, oh, honey, it's really, really important to me. I don't need it to work from Friday, but I've got to have these things. Okay, Mama, I'll do the best I can to remember it, and I hope I can remember it all. Now, if you're really serious and you know she really needs it, what happens to your head between now and a week from Friday? You wake up at 2 in the morning thinking, what was number 7 again? You're in a board meeting or a conference and you think, what was number staff meeting? You think, what was number 6? It's like you can't ever let it go if you're really serious about remembering it. That's the story of the to-do list. Now, let's say she changed it just a little bit. And she said, here's a list of 12 things. Appreciate your stopping by the store to get it for me. I don't need it until a week from Friday. And you stick it into your calendar or planning device of some kind. Now, how often do you think about it between now and a week from Friday? You don't at all. Again, that's your to-do list. You got all these pieces coming at you that you've promised to do, committed to do, hoped to do, planned to do, but you got hundreds of pieces floating around up there, responsibilities that you'd like to carry through on. But if you don't have some, what I call confetti trap, to sort of trap all that confetti going on in your head, you're going to forget half of it, you're going to be late on half of it, you're not going to follow through on half of it. It's just not going to, you're not going to be able keep track of all those pieces. So when you have something that you think, hey, I should call Zengo, you think, well, do I need to call him today, this week, or this month? Because just because you thought of it today doesn't mean you're supposed to do it today. So you just put it wherever it belongs. Hey, I should email so-and-so. Hey, I should write an article on this or that. It's like whatever confetti comes, you just stick it in there somewhere. Someone asked in the other session, should you fill this out in the morning or at night? The morning when you first get to the office or at night before you go to bed? I say, well, it depends on how you want to sleep. Because if you don't want to sleep too well, just don't write it out yet. Because you think, let's see, you wake up at 2 and think, now let's see, who is that I'm going to call? And you know, it's like, but if you want to sleep well, just fill this out at night. Think, well, tomorrow or sometime soon, I've got to do these things. Everything set? I'm going to go to sleep. It lets you sleep. Now, a couple things about your to-do list. Number one, your to-do list is never intended to be done. I was probably 38 or 40 before I realized I thought the to-do list was something you're supposed to get done. I always felt behind. I always felt, I must not be a good leader. I just feel always behind. I can never catch up. because I was planning to empty this thing. Of all the things I could or should do or plan to do or hope to do, I was planning to empty it. Because it never got empty, I felt like I was failing. When I realized that your to-do list isn't what you're supposed to get done, it's a cue list for what you hope to do. That lets you relax with it. It is in pencil. You can move things from this week to today. You can move things from today. You say, you know, the more I think about it, I think I don't really need to call him until next month. It's like you can move stuff around in here. It's very flexible. And it keeps you from forgetting stuff, commitments you've made. Now, if you have something that's time-dated, it goes on your calendar system. If you say, hey, let's meet on the 13th for lunch, it doesn't go here. It goes on your calendar system. But what you need is a combination of the 50,000 feet level, the 20,000 feet level, and the ground level. Those three tools are tools to help you focus your thinking or refocus your thinking. Let's say you've been gone for a month and think, oh man, I've got to get back to the office. Okay, where am I? You can look at these three tools and you're right back focused again. Someone close to you dies. You think, my world is just falling apart. It's like my world is just reeling right now. You get these out and you think, oops, God's still there. My purpose is still there. My dream is still there. My life work is still there. My legacy is still there. I still hope to do these things in my lifetime. All of my world hasn't gone away. It may change it quite a bit, but it hasn't gone away. So, whenever in the rest of your life, if you remember these three tools for the rest of your life, it can help you focus your thinking or refocus your thinking. Once you get it done, which I'd encourage you to do before you leave here if you could, once you've got that filled in, it'll focus or refocus your thinking in about 10 to 20 minutes for the rest of your life. Just remember these three tools. Now, the other thing is, let's say, for example, your brother, your sister, one of your staff members comes to you and says, my world's just falling apart, or I just feel lost right now. I just feel just sort of wandering and lost. I'm in a fog. My head's in a fog. You got three tools to take them through. Just take them through those tools and say, all right, go back and fill out for 2 minutes on who is God, you know, your North Star. Fill out, you know, this section on your bucket list. Put everything you've got in it. A lot of people say, I just feel so overwhelmed at the moment. When you're feeling overwhelmed, get the to-do list. Because what's overwhelming, you can go right in that to-do list. And then it's like, I'll get at it when I get at it. It's like, and so it's a good tool not only to focus and refocus yourself, but to use with your team members and staff members and colleagues. And so I would encourage you to ask yourself, how clear am I on the 50,000 foot level? And give yourself a 1 to 10, where 10 is I'm very, very clear. At the North Star 50,000 foot level, the bucket list at 20,000, and your to-do list at ground level, how would I give? 10 is, hey, that's very clear to me. I'm right on that. I know what I'm doing here. 1 is, that's not really together for me. Understand in 3 minutes, sort of, where are you clear, and where would you like to be clearer than you are? And what did you learn in this half hour together that live with forever? What, you know, just reflect on it for about 3 minutes. Let this soak in a little bit, okay? We've got just a few minutes. We got like 15 minutes for question and answer. So don't be shy about asking questions. Put your hand in the air quickly, because we want to take full advantage of the time we've got. So what questions do you have? I might be able to be helpful too. Questions?
Is in all areas of ministry or even just personal things we're going through, there are things in life that are difficult to quantify and measure. And one of the examples mm-hmm. he gave was an artist. Mm-hmm. As a musician, you know, how do you do a to-do list to accomplish this piece?
The to-do list as an artist, you still have to call people, you still have to email people, etc., to set up appointments and set up engagements and that kind of thing. And in terms of do, you have to set aside time to say, I want to write a song. In the next month, or in the next month, I need to write a song to be at this conference or something like that. So that level of measurability, to-do list, is actually fairly easy, even if you're an artist or a musician, etc. But where it gets to your bucket list, that measurability gets a little bit harder at a certain level. But you say, in 10 years, I'd like to have 3 songs that did this. In my lifetime, I'd like to have 10 songs that did that. That, you know, whatever it is that's a level that you're thinking of. Or I'd like to do 7 sculptures that did this, or 8 paintings that did this. So nothing clarifies like measurability. Why do you measure things? So people impress people? No, it's to clarify your thinking. And you say, I'd like to do 8 paintings that would hang in the Louvre. Well, I know what you mean. If you say a lot of paintings that hang in the Louvre, I may say, what, 800 paintings? That's a lot. You know, you may say, no, 8. I say, 8? You know, it's like the measurability just lends scope or size to what your dreams are. Other questions? The question is, if you're hard on yourself and you push yourself too hard, and you don't get everything done, how do you not be quite so hard on yourself? And I say, I don't know other words other than relax. To say, you aren't going to get everything done. Don't worry about it. If I don't get it done today, I'll get it done tomorrow. If I don't get it done this week, I'll get it done this month. And so these are sort of things I want to keep track of. In a sense, okay, here's the way. Say, in an ideal world, here's what I get done. But we don't live in an ideal world. We don't live in a world without interruptions, without difference, you know, things we don't expect, etc. So in an ideal world, this is what I'd like to do. But since we don't live in an ideal world, I'll get as much of this done as we can. I asked Bill Bright, the founder of Campus Crusade, one day. I said, Bill, how do you look at a day? When you're starting at a day, how do you look at the day? And he said, every morning I pray and I say, Lord, here's what I've got planned for the day. Here's the schedule they've set up for me. Anyone that you don't want me to meet with, take them out of my schedule. Anyone that you want me to meet with that isn't here, put them in my schedule. So I really want to do what you want me to do, but if I don't hear differently from you, this is what I'm planning to do. And I'd also think that. If I didn't get everything done, I'd say, Lord, I got done what you wanted me to do today, and I'd relax with that. And I'd think, well, he didn't want me to get it done today, or I'd have gotten it done today. So I'd relax with it. It would be ideal if the Holy Spirit talked to you every day and told you exactly what to do. In my experience, the Holy Spirit talks to you once or twice or 3 times in your lifetime. Now, he may talk to you every day. He doesn't talk to me every day. Matter of fact, I've talked to a lot of leaders I looked up to as a Christian. I say, tell me something. Realistically, how many times do you feel the Holy Spirit has actually given you a direction? The average answer is 3 to 4 in my lifetime so far. Now, again, you may be different. He may talk to you every day. When I worked with Campus Crusade quite a bit in the 80s in various parts of the world, people would say to me, well, I feel God called me to do this. I say, time out. Let me ask you a question. Because it felt like the Holy Spirit had talked to them and said, I want you to do this. I said, tell me something. When you say you feel called to ministry, does that mean that the Holy Spirit talked to you and told you that and did that? Which I believe he does. You may not believe the Holy Spirit talks to people today. A lot of people don't think the Holy Spirit talks to people at all today. I happen to be one that thinks he does, but not as often as some people imply. So I say, when you When you said, I feel called to this ministry, or called to move to this organization, or called to do that, do you mean that the Holy Spirit talked to you and told you to do that, or do you mean that it was used what Bill Bright called the sound mind principle, where this happened and this happened, and I felt the Holy Spirit was leading because this happened and this happened and this happened? Oh, if I've asked 75 people, or 77 people, 75 of them said, oh, the sound mind principle. They said it was a call of God, but what it was in practical life was events happening which they assumed was God's leading. Two of the 77 said, no, God talked to me and told me that. One of the two was turned out to be having seven affairs in 6 years. I think he was trying to appear more spiritual than he was. I shouldn't be judging him, but I wonder at that. The other one said, no, I feel God talked to me and said this. I believe he probably did. But I'm saying, when you think my spontaneity versus the Holy Spirit's leading me and talking to me, I'm saying, as a young leader, don't be too hard on yourself if God doesn't talk to you every day. Because in my experience, the people I've talked to, he doesn't talk to you every day. I asked Bill Bright this question. Bill Bright is one of the most godly men I've ever met in my lifetime. I don't know if you ever met him or knew him or know even who he is, but he's one of the most godly men I ever met. I said, Bill, when you're having to make, let's say you make 1,000 decisions in any 1 year, everything from what color paint should we use to who should we have in that position to should we go into China or not, you know, it's like, of all the decisions you've got to make in a year, let's say you make 1,000 decisions, what number of those decisions do you feel God speaks to you and says, I want you to do this, versus the sound mind principle? This is when he's probably 60, 65 years old. I mean, he wasn't a new Christian, etc. What percentage or what number would you say God actually spoke to him and told him? The man who started Campus Crusade. The man who has thousands of people on his staff, reaching more people for Christ than almost any organization. How many would you guess out of 1,000 he said God actually spoke to him? When I ask that of Crusade staff, they probably say, well, maybe 500, maybe 100. He said, oh, probably 3, maybe. I'm saying, young leader, don't feel unspiritual if God doesn't speak to you every day and tell you what to do. Relax. Because you basically pray and say, Lord, look, this is what I'm thinking you want me to do. If you want me to do anything else, tell me so. Here's the assumption that gets you in trouble. If you assume I'm not going to do anything until God tells me to, God calls me to do it, you may be sitting there for another 30 years in the chair waiting for him to talk to you. But if you reverse the assumption and say, Lord, you've got the ability to talk through a jackass or a burning bush or anything you want to talk through, so I'm going to just assume that this is what you want me to do. If the Lord wills it, this is what I'll do. And if you don't want me to do anything, let me know. Just let me know you don't want me to do that, and I'll stop doing it. Or I'll do something else. Just make it clear that you want me to do it. I'll do anything you ask. But until you make it clear, unless you make it clear, unless you tell me to do something, here's what I'm planning to do. And leave it up to him to tell you what not to do instead of leave it up to him to tell you what to do. That's been a great freedom in my life. And I just basically pray and say, Lord, as best I know, this is what I like. This is what I'm planning to do. If you want me to do anything else, let me know. Because if you don't, you can wait for a long time before he, quote, talks to you. If God moves you in a different way, move in that way. Like Bill Bright said, if you want someone else out of the schedule or in the schedule, it's up to you. That's fine. So your plan is, again, according to James 4:15, he said, instead, you ought to say, in other words, he said, who are you who say, today I'm going to do this and this and this? Instead, you ought to say, which means you ought to have a plan, in my book. You ought to say, If the Lord wills, here's what I'm planning to do. If the Lord wills, I will live and plan and go do this. But if it's not the Lord's will, if I've misunderstood it, if I've not heard properly from Him, if He wants me to do anything else, all He has to do is make it clear that it's Him, and I'll do whatever He asks. Okay. Other questions? The question is, what if I'm in an organization that doesn't have a clear plan, but I personally have a clear plan? Is that correct? Years ago, I told someone, if you're in a sea of confusion around you, plan an island of clarity in a sea of confusion, and other people will want to get on your island. In other words, no one is coming to tell you. You can't plan, right? They aren't telling you to plan. They're just not telling you not to plan. So I say, go ahead and develop your own plan. Be very clear in terms of who you are, what you want to do, and clear what you want your team to do, and just be very clear on your direction. And you're going to find that people around you beginning to say, how did you do that? Could I have a sample of that? Could I have a copy of that? I'd like to do that for my department or my division. And what I call lead in 360 degrees, meaning lead your staff. Develop a clear plan for what you're responsible for. But on the other hand, if your colleagues that are the same level come to you and say, you know, could I have a copy of that? How'd you do that? You know, that kind of thing. Well, show them. Help them know how to become clear. And then if whoever you report to, and this is something that surprises young leaders sometimes, but until you've done it for a while, it's like until you've been a senior leader or until you've been led other people, you don't realize how many times their thinking influences your thinking. I'm saying when you have a clear plan, often whoever you report to will say, hey, could I have a copy of that? That's helpful. I could use that other places. So I'm saying develop a clear plan and let that help the people on your staff, your colleagues, and whoever you report to. Let it help everyone all the way around you give a model of clarity, of what clear thinking is, and they will want to develop some of that clear thinking as well. Even if they don't, forget it. Just develop a clear plan, implement the clear plan. No one's telling you you can't, so go ahead and develop it and let them ask about it if they will. Again, it's one thing to ask, but no one's asking me to. No one's telling me to. Well, is anyone keeping you from it? If they're not keeping you from it, go ahead and develop a clear plan, not only for yourself, but for your team, whoever you're reporting to, and make sure that the plan you have is in alignment with the plan that works for the organization, if possible. The question is, do you have a regular time for planning and refocusing, or do you do it just when you feel a need to? I say ideally you do it at least once a year. And some people do it on their birth date. I do it on my birth date. Every year on my birth date I try to make sure in my next year everything is clear, as clear as possible. Some people do it January 1st to start the year. Some people do it in November to start the year near clear. So it's like whenever you do it, I'd encourage you to do it about once a year, just to go back over your North Star and reword that as you need to. Go back over your bucket list, and you can tweak that a little bit and then figure out what are the to-do items. By the way, there are a couple of things I wanted to remind you of before I left. I wrote them down during the break. Number one, where confidence comes from. Confidence is a byproduct of predictability. When things are predictable, you have lots of confidence. When they're not predictable, your confidence goes away. So if your confidence is sort of uncertain, try to establish what's predictable and your confidence will come back. Number two, your most productive decade in life is actually your 60s. Not your 30s or 40s or 50s. It's actually your 60s. So don't feel tremendous pressure in your 30s or 40s to have everything answered and perfect. Think, I'm learning lessons God has in mind for me so that by the time I'm 60 years old, I can maximize my 60s. And then another dimension is planning time. How much time do you set aside to plan or to think about the future? when you're 23 years old and just getting started, no one reports to you, and you're just barely getting started, you don't have to take any planning time, really, or very little. What am I going to do tomorrow? Maybe by the end of the week. But when you're in charge of a major organization with 10,000 people reporting to you, you have to take a lot more time to plan. Where is the organization going? How do the people know where we're going? Do they all know what's expected of them? That kind of thing. So the higher you go in the organizational pyramid, the more time it takes to plan. So every promotion you get, you need to set aside more time each year for the planning process. Don't forget that. So you may say, well, Bob, you're talking about a lot of time to plan if you take a day a year or a day a month or a day a quarter, however much time you feel at this phase of your life you need to take. But I'm saying the higher you go, the more time you have to put into planning. Any other questions before we call it a day today?
Yeah.
The question is, how guilty should I be for the fog around me? You shouldn't at all. In other words, if the team leader you've got, you could be frustrated by it, but not guilty for it. You can say, I wish they'd make clear what they want. And remember, your frustration with the lack of clarity up here, when you become president, realize that your team is wanting you to clarify your expectations, wanting you to clarify where you are. And the principle, nothing clarifies like measurability. If you say, we want to do 30 of this year versus we want to do a lot of them, again, 30 versus 300 versus 3,000 versus 300,000, when you say we want to do a lot of it and you're thinking 300,000 and your staff hears we want to do at least 30, it puts a lot of tension in a group. But if you can just say we want to do 300 this year, you're clear and they're clear. So that the purpose for measurability is not to say you bad person if you don't hit 300. It's to clarify what is your expectation and does the whole team understand what you're expecting. That's what clarity gives, is clarity with the whole team as to what the expectations are. But you shouldn't feel guilty if someone else isn't clear. You should make it a focus of your life to bring clarity to anything over which you have responsibility. Okay? All right, that's it for today, I think, and I'll see you tomorrow. Okay?
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you.